This episode was sponsored on Patreon by VIP Story Glory Guard congregant Thomas K. He wanted to dedicate the episode to his grandpa Applejack. He used to feed him cereal. What kind? I don't know. You have to ask Applejack.
Oh, dear congregants, get yourself a bag of donuts, decorate your home office ficus with a seasonal hockey stick, and crank up the Alanis Morissette, because today's story takes place in the great nation of Canada. The story must be told.
The story must be told.
You know, congregants, it's not all skating rinks and Tim Hortons up there in Canada. No, sir, it's cold. It's cold. So I'd like to welcome Brother Reed up here, and he's going to read us a prayer about the importance of road safety.
Let us pray. Oh, Story, you are the black ice over which my thin firestone tires skid. You are the beech tree on the corner of Dumas and Worth Street, towards which I swerve and spin. You are the memory from 2 months ago that flashes before my eyes. Sir, when I changed your oil, I noticed your tires are worn down to the treads. You should really shut up, I cried, giving the young mechanic a slap. Story, you are the collision. You are the fire traveling up my dungarees. And the melting radio playing the Counting Crows hit song, Mr. Jones and Me. Story, you are my rapture as I sing along. Mr. Jones and me, a story! I hope they wrote that song for you. That's a scene from our new hit movie, Hot Crash, Too Fast, starring Topher Grace. And now, a psalm read by our dear congregant, Thomas K. Take it, Thomas K.
Thank you, dear clergy, for having me. The following psalm is titled, A Box of Family. Judge Mathis played on the TV when a knock banged on the door. Birdie pressed mute, gave her butt a scoot to see what the knocking was for. An officer stood on her stoop, a frown above his chin. Birdie caught it. At this, she nodded. Ma'am, I don't know where to begin. Your husband, son, daughter, and dog were in a Taurus on the 402 when two trucks hit their sides, and though nobody died, they were compressed into a cube. Birdie collapsed on her bottom. The force, it did bruise her. A cube, she cried. Parallelogram, he clarified. Come on, I got it in the cruiser. Birdie screamed unholy as the officer popped the trunk at the slanted cube. How it cried, barked, and stewed, a mash of fur, metal, and chunks. Birdie said, what do I do now? The solemn cop, he scoffed. Hell if I know, the man chuckled. He started his car and was off. Birdie held her family cube as it leaked saliva, blood, and piss. At least you're alive. The woman, she sighed, and she gave her cube a kiss. Birdie set the cube on the table. She mixed dog food with beer and yogurt, scooped it on a plate, watched the cube as it ate, and said, when you poop, it will hurt.
Thank you, Congregant Thomas K. Pastor Andrew, why don't you drop us some slick story? Just slick. Some slick story.
This story is titled Stalkers by a real nasty grandpa.
December 1986, Red Lake, Ontario. Gordon Langlois' palm sweated in his leather gloves as he pressed the doorbell at 5 Hughes Crescent in Red Lake, Ontario. A muffled two-tone chime rang throughout the house. He scanned the rows of nearly identical ranch-style homes for signs of life. 2-foot piles of dirty snow bordered the icy sidewalks. A freshly waxed, black Chevrolet Caprice lazily crept down the road, crunching the packed snow beneath its tires. The metallic clink of the slide lock returned his focus to the door. The deadbolt clunked and the door opened. Cassandra Lemieux stood in front of Gordon with her hand on the doorknob and a bright smile on her face. She wore a gray, homemade Christmas sweatshirt with an iron-on cutout of Santa Claus, outlined in sparkling red puffy paint. Her face froze with panic when she saw Gordon's police uniform. Mrs. Lemieux? Gordon asked. Cassandra nodded her head quickly. Gordon took off his hat and held it in his hands. Steam rose from his bald head. Mrs. Lemieux, I'm sorry, but your husband Mark was involved in a car accident on the 105 in Yonge Street this afternoon. Cassandra slunk down the doorframe and onto the floor. She covered her mouth and began to hyperventilate. He was taken to the emergency room and... Gordon paused. Mrs. Lemieux, the doctors, they did all they could. I'm sorry, but your husband, he passed away. Cassandra let out a long, helpless wail and covered her face with her hands. Gordon stood on the front steps, squeezing the brim of his hat. Is there anyone you would like me to call? Asked Gordon. Cassandra didn't respond. Gordon looked at the ground in silence as Cassandra leaned over on the floor and squeezed her knees. After a few minutes, Gordon put his cap back on. The station will be in touch with you, ma'am. I'm so sorry for your loss. Cassandra's body shook as she wept. She turned away from Gordon and crawled down the hallway. She stopped a few feet away and curled up in a ball. Gordon clasped the doorknob and shut the door. Her muffled cries echoed throughout the house behind him. He slowly walked down the driveway, picked up the pace as he rounded the corner, then jogged to his rusted Oldsmobile. He slid in, turned the keys in the ignition, and peeled away. Gordon listened to a police scanner as he drove up and down the 105 for 20 minutes. Dispatch intermittently called out support for medical assistance, and cops called in the occasional traffic stop. The radio waves were otherwise silent. At 5:15 p.m., Gordon headed back to Hughes Crescent. He parked 10 houses away from the Lemieux residence on the other side of the road, watching the home in his rearview mirror. He switched off the police scanner. At 5:23, Mark Lemieux's brand new 1986 Honda Civic turned onto Hughes Crescent and pulled up the driveway. Its road salt caked taillights lingered for a moment until the car shuddered and turned off. A very alive Mark Lemieux got out of the car and stretched. He wore a heavy down coat with his pants tucked into his snow boots. He held his right arm horizontally in the air to balance himself as he walked across the icy sidewalk and up to his front door. When he put the keys in the lock, the door swung open. Cassandra Lemieux let out a shriek that cut through the windows of Gordon's Oldsmobile. She collapsed at Mark's feet and hugged his legs. Mark raised his hands in the air in shock as Cassandra wept. She pulled herself up and embraced him, kissing his cheeks. She rubbed his face to confirm he was real and kissed him again. Gordon turned on the ignition and began the 5-hour drive home to Winnipeg.
Gordy, honey, come set the table, please.
Called his mother from the top of the basement steps. Gordon was hypnotized by his work in the dim basement. A single 30-watt bulb gently swayed above his head. The concrete floor chilled his feet through his wool socks. To his right was a steel folding chair over which he draped his Red Lake Police Department jacket. He pushed a thumbtack through a Polaroid of Mark Lemieux onto a massive, messy corkboard next to a picture of Cassandra. Both pictures were taken from a distance, like surveillance photos from a private eye.
Gordy.
Just a minute, Ma! Gordon uncapped a red Sharpie with his teeth and sucked on the cap. He circled the pictures of Mark and Cassandra. Underneath them, he wrote, Mark and Cassandra Lemieux, Red Lake, Ontario, reunited on December 18th, 1986. He capped the Sharpie and took a step back. He folded his arms and admired the corkboard in front of him. Dozens of pairs of Polaroids were pinned next to each other, circled in red with names underneath. On the right side of the board was a large map of Canada. Multicolored sewing pins dotted the map, marking small towns stretching from Alberta to the western border of Quebec. Beneath the corkboard were stacks of banker's boxes swollen with files, photographs and notebooks detailing couples he'd reunited. They were dated in ascending order from left to right, starting with 1977, then picking back up in 1979, and continuing through 1986. While his skills had improved over the years, the fundamentals stayed the same. Gordon would linger in grocery stores or shopping malls until he found someone who needed to be saved. He'd follow them home. He'd follow them to work. He would go through their garbage and sit feet away from them at restaurants, taking notes and snapping pictures until he had their routines memorized. He would then choose a day and a time and reunite them. He would give them a fresh start. Gordon took a 2-year break after reuniting 5 couples in Winnipeg in 1977. In 1977, he was green and careless. He was hitting families too close to home. It hadn't occurred to him to use a police scanner yet, and he was foolish enough to wear his uniform in public places. As he walked away from his final reuniting in 1977, the Sinclair family, he felt a nagging, prickling sensation over his shoulders and down his back. He convinced himself people were staring at him in town. Whenever there was a knock on his door or when the telephone rang, he was sure it would be the police. For 2 years, he only left his house for work. His mother did the grocery shopping and he cut his own hair. Gordon spent those 2 years memorizing maps of Canada, keeping an eye on the news, and planning. When he went back out in 1979, he was a pro. He had the files in front of him to prove it. Robert and Jody Baker, Kingston, Ontario, reunited June 3rd, 1986. Marianne and Doug Martin, Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, reunited January 2nd, 1986. Stuart Hall and Kevin Peterson, Grand Rapids, Manitoba, reunited October 9th, 1985.
Food's getting cold, honey.
Oh, be right up!
Gordon knelt and pulled out the box labeled 1986. He slid in a manila folder filled with pictures of the Lemieux, along with a nearly filled composition notebook, where he tracked their every public movement for the past month. He put the lid back on the box and slid it against the wall. Gordon took his Red Lake police coat off the chair. He navigated through knee-high stacks of old newspapers to a coat rack hidden in the dark. He took a hanger from the rack, slipped his coat over it, and hung it up. It took its place among dozens of other homemade police uniforms from towns across Canada. March 1987, Weyburn, Saskatchewan. Gordon watched Diane and Arthur McLennan embrace in his rearview mirror. Arthur's back heaved up and down as Diane stood stunned in her nurse scrubs on the front porch of 1060 Sims Avenue. When they went into the house and closed the door behind them, Gordon turned the key in the ignition and pulled away. He turned on the police scanner and he made his way to Highway 35 back to Winnipeg. There was no chatter beyond a police officer calling in a reckless driver. Gordon came to a full stop at King Street and Redcoat Trail. He checked his mirrors. A freshly waxed, black Chevrolet Capri waited behind him, a little too close to his bumper. The glare of the sun on the windshield obscured the driver's face. Gordon turned right. The Caprice followed without stopping at the stop sign. It kept a distance of only a few feet between them. Gordon salivated. His heart pounded through his fingertips as he gripped the steering wheel. He breathed in deep through his nose and out through his mouth, attempting to remain calm. The Caprice continued to tailgate. He came to a red light on 18th Street and turned right. The Caprice followed. He made it a few blocks south, his eyes glued to the rearview mirror, when a red light flashed on the Caprice's dashboard, followed by 2 quick, piercing yelps of a siren. Gordon felt every pore in his skin break out in sweat. He took quick, shallow breaths and saw spots. He debated making a run for it when the light flashed and the sirens yelped again. Gordon turned on his blinker and pulled over to the side of the road. He squeezed his eyes shut and slowly counted up to 10 and then back down to 1 until he was interrupted by a knock on his window. Gordon bit his tongue and looked left. A woman in a Royal Canadian Mounted Police uniform stared down at him with a light smirk. The officer had a round face and sparkling blue eyes. She was short and shapeless in her winter coat, with auburn hair pulled back beneath a toque that had RCMP emblazoned on the front. She made a spinning motion with her hand, instructing Gordon to roll down the window. He complied. Cold air blew in, chilling the sweat pouring from his temples. He tried to speak, but he choked on his words.
Hey there, Gordon.
The officer smiled. Her voice was warm and pleasant. She clasped her hands behind her back and rocked back and forth on the balls of her feet. Neither did she break eye contact.
Gotcha,
she said, followed by a wink. Gordon just nodded. A voice squawked out of the radio on her hip. She switched it off.
I'm Inspector Francis Saunderson. I've been inspecting ya for a long time, Mr. Langlois.
She had a soft voice, like a kindergarten teacher. Gordon bit his lower lip. Inspector Saunderson just smiled and stared at him. Silence hung between them.
I think it's real nice what you did back there for the McLennans. It was nice what you did last year for the Lemieux and the Bakers. Oh, and the Hansons 3 years before that, too. Not many people get second chances like them.
She rubbed her nose with the back of her glove, then frowned.
Mr. Langlois, you don't look so good. Are you doing okay?
Gordon didn't move.
Oh, Mr. Langlois, here's what we're gonna do. I'm going to go back to my car. I'm going to pull ahead of you, and you're going to follow me, okay? Let me get you a coffee. That should perk you right up. Do you like coffee, Mr. Langlois?
She grinned. Gordon swallowed hard. Coffee is fine, he replied.
Perfect.
Inspector Saunderson accented the word with a cheerful shrug of her shoulders. She folded her hands below her belly and didn't move. Am I under arrest? Gordon stammered. Inspector Saunderson shook her head.
Oh, goodness, no. Although, I think you should change out of that coat in case a real police officer sees you.
She tapped the roof of Gordon's Oldsmobile and headed back to her car. When she pulled out, Gordon followed. Inspector Saunderson held her coffee cup with both hands and leaned over the table. She spoke quietly but cheerfully and addressed Gordon like she'd known him for ages.
It's so crazy that we're finally talking.
Inspector Saunderson wiggled her body with excitement. Gordon stared forward with his hands in his lap. Inspector Saunderson's face dropped into a frown.
What's the matter?
She asked. Gordon swallowed.
How did you find me?
Her face lit back up.
Same way you catch anyone. A little luck combined with good old-fashioned police work. I can't give all my secrets away.
She winked. Gordon twisted his mouth and kept quiet. Inspector Saunderson smiled.
Okay, fine. I'll tell you. But only because you asked nicely.
She took a sip of coffee and set her mug back down.
See, I lost my husband at the end of 1976. I just graduated into the RCMP. I was new, so I was working nights. Our schedules were at odds and hardly got to see him. He was a Gordon, too.
She nervously laughed and slumped her shoulders.
One afternoon, I was woken up by the doorbell. I rolled over to fall back asleep when it rang again, twice. I got out of bed, went downstairs, and there were two policemen on my front steps. Gordon had drowned, fell right through the ice. We were having problems at the time. Big problems. But I know he still loved me, and if we only had a chance to work through them, I just...
Inspector Saunderson sighed and remained quiet for a moment.
I'm so sorry, said Gordon.
She didn't look up. At a loss for words, Gordon reached across the table and put his hand on hers. She looked up and smiled.
Anyway,
she continued,
I took a little time off. My very first case back was investigating a man posing as a police officer. He told two people their partners had died, but their partners to come home quite alive only 20 minutes later. Sound familiar? At the time, I thought it was such an evil thing to do.
Gordon's cheeks burned.
I'd just gotten off my shift when I saw you the first time, in a Safeway. Something was off about your uniform. The patches didn't look right. The color was off. And you were wearing your hat indoors, which officers just don't do. You were stalking Lauren Page. Do you remember Lauren Page?
Gordon nodded his head. Curly red hair, tall, pointy nose, reunited with Derek Page in Winnipeg, 1977.
I followed you. I wrote down your plates and watched as you did, well, what you do. When I saw you break the news and she collapsed in your arms, I don't know. I guess it hit too close to home.
Inspector Saunderson gave him a sad smile.
I was paralyzed. Then I watched Mr. Page come home. I saw them reunite and get a second chance, and I don't know. I suppose I realized what you were doing was beautiful.
A glowing, warm sensation flowed from Gordon's heart down to his fingers.
Finally, I walked up their front porch and knocked on the door. They were crying, but looked so happy. I apologized. I said there'd been a mistake and hoped they'd understand. Mrs. Page said nothing and just hugged me. It was clear to me that this was the best moment of their lives. I was so happy to be part of it. I wanted to keep them that happy forever.
A tear rolled down her cheek, and she looked down at the table.
It was the first time I'd felt happy since Gordon died, so I've been following you ever since. I give the couples a few minutes to reconnect, then go up and knock on their door to apologize and tell them we made a mistake. No one has ever been mad. They always thank me. I have a whole system, just like you.
Inspector Saunderson smiled. Gordon clenched his teeth.
You've done well to not return to the scenes or check back up. That's how most people get caught. Taking a break was smart, too.
She took a sip of her coffee. Silence hung between them.
What do you want from me?
Asked Gordon. Inspector Saunderson gasped and put her hand on her chest.
I want to be your partner, silly. Let's make this official.
Gordon put his face in his hands.
Or I could take you to jail.
Gordon looked up.
But you'd go down too, he whispered.
I don't think so,
she said. She was no longer smiling. Her bright blue eyes had gone dark. Her face was flat and completely empty of emotion, like her soul had left her body and gone somewhere else. Gordon's ears rang. She had him.
Let's do it,
he croaked. Inspector Saunderson snapped back to life. She squealed and clapped her hands three times with delight.
Let's do one tonight,
she said, eyes beaming.
Tonight? I'm sorry, Inspector Saunderson, there's no way...
Francis,
she corrected.
Francis, that's not how this works.
Gordon felt sick.
I've got us covered. I did all your homework for you. Michelle and William Fox. It has to be tonight. He works a late shift at the auto plant. It will be perfect. All you need to know is the name. We'll do it together.
Inspector Saunderson dropped $5 on the table and started to put on her coat.
Where are we going?
Gordon asked.
Winnipeg.
Gordon dropped his fists on the table.
Are you crazy?
He snarled through his teeth. Inspector Saunderson smiled.
Everything will be just fine. I even brought you a uniform. You get to wear a real one this time.
She got out of the booth and zipped up her jacket. Gordon stayed put. Inspector Saunderson pretended to act confused.
Are we gonna go, or should I call your plates in?
Gordon swallowed hard and got up from the booth. March 1987, Winnipeg, Manitoba. Gordon shivered. He watched the neon green numbers of his dashboard clock switch from 3:13 to 3:14. His breath fogged over the windshield of his Oldsmobile. The car was surrounded by darkness. The only light came from the lamp on the front porch of 21 Maple Road. There wasn't another house for miles. Inspector Saunderson's headlights flashed in Gordon's rearview mirror. He sighed and got out of the car, quietly shutting the door behind him. Inspector Saunderson was already making her way up the driveway. Gordon jogged to catch up.
Hey!
He whispered. She kept moving.
Francis!
She stopped and turned around. Voices came from the radio on her hip. She flinched and switched it off.
Sorry, this is so fun!
She loudly whispered back. Gordon caught up with her. He gently took her arm. She smiled up at him.
Just listen to me for a sec. You need to take a breath. When we go up there, you keep it short and to the point. Just the facts. William got in an accident. We did all we could. We bail if anything seems off, okay?
I know. I've got it.
Inspector Saunderson was shaking with excitement. Her eyes darted around wildly.
Once he comes home and they reunite, we get in our cars and go. Do you understand?
Yes, of course. We'll lay low, then I'll call you in a few months and we'll do it all over again. We'll plan it together.
The hair on the back of Gordon's neck stood up.
And you're absolutely certain about their schedules?
I don't see a car in the driveway. Do you?
Okay, let's double check the garage. This is too sloppy.
She smiled and grabbed Gordon by the elbow. She pulled up the sleeve of her coat and showed Gordon her watch. It was 3:22.
Gordon, calm down. He'll be home at 3:30. Let's boogie.
She dropped his elbow, then jogged up to the front porch and rang the doorbell. Gordon ran to catch up. The house was silent. Inspector Saunderson squeezed Gordon's hand. She let out a tiny squeal. Gordon heard footsteps approach the door. Inspector Saunderson rang the doorbell again. The door opened. A man in a t-shirt and flannel pajama pants stared at them. His sleepy eyes opened wide when he saw they were the police.
William Fox,
said Inspector Saunderson.
What's this about?
He asked. The concrete porch felt like jello beneath Gordon's feet. His head spun with panic.
Sir, sorry. There's been a mix-up. I'm so sorry to bother you at this hour.
Gordon's mouth was so dry he fumbled over his words. Inspector Saunderson cut in.
Officer Langwell, we're at the right spot. Sorry about my partner,
she said. The man at the door twisted his mouth, confused. Inspector Saunderson smiled and cocked her head. Footsteps came up behind William. A woman in a puffy blue bathrobe came into view.
Will, what's going on?
Michelle Fox asked in a gentle voice. The woman connected eyes with Inspector Saunderson. She took a step back and covered her mouth with her hand. In one quick movement, Frances unholstered her sidearm and shot William Fox in the forehead. The back of his head blew out with a burst of pink mist. Heavy chunks of brain splattered against Michelle's face as William fell back like a wooden soldier. Michelle turned to run and Frances shot her in the back. She instantly fell to the floor. Gordon screamed. He took a step back, but Inspector Saunderson grabbed him by the wrist. She stared at him with cold, emotionless eyes and pulled him into the hallway. She shut the door behind him. Inspector Saunderson calmly stepped over William's body. His eyes were dead and flat, staring at the front door. Bits of brain slid down the wall onto the baseboards. Michelle wheezed and pulled herself forward in an army crawl, leaving a trail of dark red blood behind her. Inspector Saunderson came to her side and rolled her over with her foot. Michelle stared up at her. She blinked quickly. Blood flowed out of the corner of her mouth. Pink foam bubbled out of her lung from an exit wound the size of a baseball.
Inspector Saunderson, Francis, please, let's go. We can turn around,
Gordon pleaded. But she was hypnotized, moving robotically. Inspector Saunderson knelt down beside her.
I loved my Gordon so much. How dare you?
Her voice was even and calm. Michelle choked.
He didn't love you the way he loved me. He fucked you, but he didn't love you. He thought I didn't know, but I knew. I knew.
Francis, just please,
whispered Gordon.
He and I would have worked through it. We'd come out stronger. All we needed was a second chance. But he was taken from me.
Inspector Saunderson quietly stood up. Michelle gurgled from deep in her chest.
You don't get a second chance.
Blood sprayed across the floor in the shape of a halo. Inspector Saunderson holstered her gun and turned to Gordon. She smiled like nothing had happened. Tears welled in Gordon's eyes and his tongue swelled.
Francis, what have you done?
She gave him a puzzled look.
I killed them, Gordon.
She delivered her words calmly, like she was commenting on the weather.
I release all of them. The Lemieux, the Bakers, right at the best moment of their lives. We spend our whole lives trying to be happy. You don't need to go any further once you've reached the top,
she said. Gordon heaved forward and vomited. Inspector Saunderson took a step back as it splashed on the hardwood floor.
We need to up our game, Gordon. Some people don't deserve each other. We need to balance the scales.
Francis, no!
If you came to my doorstep and I got a second chance with my Gordon, I would have died then and there. I can't imagine feeling happier. Your couples, they pass on at their happiest. Isn't that sweet, Gordon? I'm like an angel.
Gordon wiped his mouth and opened the door. He backed onto the front porch. Inspector Saunderson looked down at the foxes.
Some people don't deserve a second chance, though.
Gordon backed down the stairs.
You can go now. I'll take it from here. I'm so happy we get to be a team now.
Inspector Saunderson bent down and took Michelle by the legs. She dragged her into the kitchen, neither did she look up at Gordon. It was as if he wasn't there at all. Gordon's knees wobbled on his way back to his Oldsmobile. His boots left bloody footprints in the snow. Gordon drove through a dark and sleeping Winnipeg. He had one hand on the wheel and dug fingernails into his cheek with the other. His eyes burned. His life's work was ruined. It wasn't supposed to be this way. He cursed himself. He thought he had been so careful. But there were no witnesses. It would be his word against a police officer's. He tried to count the people she must have killed. 36? 40? Gordon pulled into a closed Petro Canada gas station and parked in the darkness. This had to stop. He'd call it in and get a head start. South Dakota was only an hour and a half away, or he'd go as far west as he couldn't cross into Washington. He got out of the car and walked up to a pair of payphones. Gordon wedged the receiver between his ear and shoulder and pressed zero. The payphone on the side of the gas station was hidden from street lamps. He was safe. The station was closed for the night. No cars went up or down St. Matthews Avenue.
Operator, how may I assist you?
A voice said through static on the phone.
Can you connect me with the Winnipeg RCMP office, please?
Sir, if this is an emergency, please hang up and dial 911.
No emergency. I have, a crime tip. Anonymous.
Gordon stammered. A pause hung between them.
Hold,
said the operator. Their connection clicked a few times, and he was passed through.
RCMP Winnipeg,
said a man's husky voice on the other end.
Hi, I need to, file a report or a complaint on an officer. I need to speak to someone.
What's your name, sir?
I don't have a name.
The man on the other end sighed.
Do you have the name of the officer, sir?
The man asked.
Inspector Francis Saunderson, said Gordon.
Okay, hold on a second. Don't hang up, sir.
Gordon was put on hold. Minutes passed before the man picked back up.
Sir, I don't think I can help you. Could you give me more information? The only Francis Saunderson I have here in the system left the force in 1977.
Gordon went cold. He stood stunned, then hot panic set in.
21 Maple Road!
Gordon shouted into the phone. He dropped the receiver and sprinted to his car. Gordon's hands shook as he tried to fit the key in the front door. Lights shone out through the living room windows, competing with the rising sun. The door swung open before he could turn his key. His mother stood before him. She covered her mouth and screamed.
Oh my God! Oh my honey! Oh my boy! My boy!
Gordon's mother burst into tears and embraced him. Her vision tunneled.
You're alive!
She sobbed into his shoulder. His mother pulled him close by the back of his head. Francis Saunderson walked into the hallway from the kitchen. Her bright blue eyes met Gordon's. She frowned.
You don't have to do this, he whispered.
Gordon's mother pulled away. Her eyes darted around the room.
Gordy? What's she talking about? We would have made a great team,
Inspector Saunderson said.
And we can still make a great team. You and me, he pleaded.
It's too late.
She tapped the radio on her hip. Gordon's heart sank.
A
police scanner, he said to himself. Inspector Saunderson smiled.
Gordy? Honey? Is everything okay? Officer, what's going on?
Your son is alive, Mrs. Langlois. Risen from the dead. Enjoy this moment,
she whispered. Inspector Saunderson put her hand on her holster. Gordon closed his eyes and pulled his mother close.
It's okay, Ma.
Gordon kissed his mother on the cheek. A bear, white as snow, sits on the shore in the impossible north. She beholds the water before her from which all life came. Ice old like time peaks over the waves, buoyed by their massive frozen hearts and darkness that will forever remain untouched by light. The darkness will outlive the sun. This story must be told.
Thank you, Pastor Andrew. Boy, that story reminded me of a joke I heard. You want to hear it? Who wants to hear it? Okay. Here we go. Knock, knock. Oh, who's there? The story? Oh, the story who? The TGI Fridays on State Route 725 burned down. All of downtown Centerville smells like jalapeno poppers and stoned teens. Got reason to believe it's arson. I gotta take you to the station. We've got some questions. Well, I guess you had to be there. Show's over, folks. That's it. Amscrape. Get out. Hit the road, Jack. Pound the sand. Pack up and shit out. Lick your lips and clutch your cheeks. Take a snooze on the...
Thank you for listening to This Story Must Be Told. I wrote a top 50 hit with a gorilla. We've got merch. Yes, we do. Go to www.babyneedsdaddy.com. Seriously, that's the site. And get your merch today. The hit song I wrote with the gorilla was called I Go Coco Nuts For You. I fought for it to be called I Go Bananas For You, but the gorilla didn't understand the wordplay. That's when the tension began. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TSMBTPod. The whole clergy is on Twitter, too. Follow us and get a little peek into our story. Fantastic lives. The gorilla and I went on a tour and played all the hot spots, Toledo, Tampa, Little Rock, and Frankfort, Kentucky. But by Tampa, we were hooked on drugs. Want to hear our Patreon exclusive podcast, Charlie? It's called the 522 Club, and you can only get it on Patreon. So go to www.patreon.com/TSMBT and help us out. I fought the gorilla in a tour bus after confronting him about selling our VCR for smack. Cranked on angel dust, he ripped off my left arm. Buy our book of Psalms. www.thestorymustbetold.com will take you right there. It's real fresh and true. The gorilla and I lost touch after that fight. I got clean and tried the singer-songwriter thing. I heard the gorilla got into painting. But in 1998, we were reunited on the hit VH1 show Bands Reunited. It was tearful. Let me tell ya. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new story. Turns out me and the gorilla both found Christ in rehab. And now we're playing all the hot Christian rock venues. Our new hit is called Jesus Made a Monkey Out of Me, and it's about the time our Christian Lord laid with a chimp to give birth to man. Leg put it... Leg. His name should be Leg. I fucked that one up. That's just writing 101. Mark put his hands in the air and... It should be Leg.
Yeah,
I'm going to redo this from the top.
Leg Lemieux.
Leg Lemieux. Oh, yeah, Leg Lemieux. He was a great baseball player. Great baseball player. Shot
in the arm, weirdly.
For being a pervert. He shot to death. He got shot in the arm until he died for being a bank pervert in schools.
Real quick, you said four towns across Canada.
Damn it. Shit. Why do I invite you to these?
Oh, gee.
You're swell. You're real. I have to remember what they say in the Hemingway doc. He says bitch a lot.
I'll tell you what happens. You marry a woman and all of a sudden you're bitched.
Oh, it's a verb. That's
fun. He was a peach. By the way, all these addresses are Tim Hortons.
I was wondering. I was like, there's got to be a...
Yeah, I like scanned maps to find Tim Hortons.
Oh, God.
So mean. Okay, here we go. so clever. What a
Who
good
wrote
writer.
This?
God, I make Mark Twain look like a fucking...
Piece of shit.
Like a fucking this guy who beats dogs and then uploads videos on YouTube of it. Inspector Saunders... Oh, you could hear me lick my lips. Do you like that, Hanum? Do you like when I lick my lips? I watch them. I watch the man walk down the street and it gets my tongue hard. All right. I'm just wasting your
sorry,
time
buddy.
Right now, Adam. I'm so sorry. March 1987. Winnipeg, Manitoba. Winnipeg's in Manitoba, right?
I think so.
I just can't wait for someone to see it's the Tim Hortons. That's the only reason I wrote this story.
The story must be told.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.